Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Wednesday afternoon. ESPN 102.5, The Game. By order of the Peaky Blinders, we now talk to Chris Mason, who now joins us. C-Mace, what's up?
Not too much. Just doing little odds and ends around the house, around the yard, and all that fun kind of stuff. So other than that, not a whole lot. How are you guys doing?
What's odds and ends around the house? What does that include?
Well, the big one is going around the whole entire house and cleaning up after kids. And, you know, unloading the dishwasher, loading it up, going out to the shed, organizing that, random yard stuff, just odds and ends. Everything you can imagine. I'm just going around. I'm kind of bored, so I'm just walking around looking at looking for different things to do. And then, you know, kind of huffing and puffing under my breath at the kids for leaving stuff everywhere and that I have to clean it up.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that's been going on, a lot of that. How would you answer this question? Name one thing from your childhood that young people today wouldn't understand. We've been having a lot of fun with this question today on the show. How would you answer that?
Wow, that's a great question. One thing that young people wouldn't understand. Well, I think it would definitely be, for me, is the phone calls and the lack of technology and maybe video games. They wouldn't understand what an Intellivision or a ColecoVision is when they got, you know, Xbox and PS4 and computer games. So I don't think they would understand. And maybe getting outside and just going out and playing with absolutely zero technology.
Yeah, what a concept,
and
huh?
Roaming the neighborhood at a very young age, unsupervised.
Somebody sent us jarts, tweeted us jarts. Can you just think about how, like, unsafe today? Like, who would let their kids go out and throw, like, metal spikes in the backyard trying to get it into a plastic circle?
Oh, lawn darts? Oh, my
lawn
God.
Darts.
We used to play
right.
that all
yeah,
the time
yeah.
when we were kids.
Right.
With my
like,
grandparents.
But just think about that. They allowed us to play that. And today, I don't think any of us would trust our kids or the neighbor's kids to go out there and play lawn darts.
No. I don't even know if they make it anymore. I think they banned it, didn't they?
I would think so.
Yeah, I have no idea what those are.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was a great game. I used to play with my grandparents and my parents when we go up to visit them. It's a great game.
I'm drawing blanks because you brought up Intellivision. That's a great one. Willie,
I had one. That's the one I had.
Oh.
ColecoVision was the better one. We had the Intellivision with the little stick players and all that stuff.
The stick players, right? Intellivision had the knob, right? Didn't it have the knob?
The
you
pad,
turned
like
the knob.
Like the weird kind of circle pad.
The circle pad, right. Yeah. Willie, I'm drawing blanks. The handheld game that we know, the football game with the little stick, it goes up and down, and then you run it across the board, and it comes back to the beginning, running across.
Yeah.
And I had the baseball one. That was a home run. What was who made those? Was that Mattel? Who did those?
Well, Mattel and Coleco each had their own version
of
the football game, right? Where there was a series of red dots. You were a brighter red dot. Everybody else was a kind of more of a faded red dot. That's how you knew who had the ball.
And you obviously laughed when I did the baseball game. When you hit the home run, it goes,
oh, I had
nah,
that, yeah. It's a great feeling.
No, and it was all lit up, and your little stick figure would run around the bases. So that was Mattel. Those were Mattel, right?
Those were Mattel that made those noises, yeah. And then
Chris,
the Coleco electronic quarterback was another one.
Okay, do you remember the ones we're talking about, the handhelds?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember all those. I love video games. I still do. I still play video games, actually, as we've talked about here on the show.
Yeah,
Red Dead.
Yeah. Played. You know what? I got into Fortnite recently.
Oh, yeah?
Played. My daughter, who's 13, she plays with her friends. I'm like, all right, what is this? All this crazy Fortnite about? And, I see what it's about.
Do you get on the headset and talk?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. My best buddy, he's actually probably get embarrassed by telling him he's a coach for the Colorado Avalanche's farm team. And him and I get there on the headsets. We don't join other people's crews or anything. We just play like the duos, or we play like a game on our own and do the campaign, which is not online or whatever. It's online, but not with a group of people. But we went and played Fortnite, and this is our first time in duos. And Chase, you know, there's a lot of pretty good players out there. Our first two times we won the Battle Royale. Twice. Two times in a row, we were laughing our head off, and I just rubbing it in my daughter's face, too. I was celebrating so hard the first one, she left the room, and then we won the second one, and I ran into her room to tell her, and she's like, oh, just rolled her eyes at me.
That's fantastic.
Oh, what a good father.
I'm surprised. My mom weighed in on this. She's listening and said beepers. The beepers they haven't come up during this conversation. Oh.
That's more 90s. Pagers, beepers. I just kind of feel like you'd have to be really young, you know, not to remember pagers or beepers, because that was more of a 90s thing. That's the only reason that's what I suspect why that hasn't been brought up. I thought about it, but I was like, yeah. But most people will remember those, I would think.
I mean, I do.
You remember a pager and a beeper, right? Sure. Even though you're early 30s. Like, I just kind of feel like you'd have to be really young. Like, obviously, a teenager today would have no clue.
Yeah.
Even a college kid would probably have no clue. But I kind of feel like you had a little bit, you know, you'd have to be really young not to remember. But it's still a good one. It is definitely a good one. And laughable, because that would then lead us to either the landline or the payphone, right? So you had to go call from there. It looks like 2014 playoff is, it just seems and feels like that's where it's headed. And I'm not saying that that's a done deal, but that's what it feels like to this point. What do you think of a 2014 playoff with 16 pods?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to come back. You know, I've seen a lot of, you know, Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie and Pierre LeBrun and everybody that's kind of the insiders and tweeting out what the potential format's going to be. And, you know, supposedly there's going to be some regular season games played for seeding, and then, you know, the play-in to get into the playoffs. But I just really wanted to come back. I'm actually surprised when I look at the comments in some of those. Some people are just like, just cancel it already. And, you know, they're just so pessimistic about this whole situation. And I really don't understand that. Way of thinking. I think if they can find a way to get this done and do it safely, and if all the, you know, the reopenings go as planned, I don't see any reason why they shouldn't try to complete this season. But I think, yeah, I'm for it. I think, you know, obviously with the committee they have there, you know, that every single day they're doing their due diligence and trying to find the best way to make this work and figure out all the logistics, the teams and all that. I just wanted to come back. And that 2014 thing to me is completely fine. If everyone's got a chance, you know, there's no sense having those teams that are just, you know, vying for the draft positioning. They don't want to come back and they have nothing to play for, essentially. So you got teams that are in, there's more teams in that have something to play for, and the drama and just the live sports. Can you imagine tuning in? I'll be watching more hockey than probably I've ever watched in my entire life at one time. You know, trying to get as much as I can in there to do this. But if they figure out, I just feel like it's something that is feasible, that can be done. If they can find the way, I feel it's time to get that going. And obviously they're going to take all the precautions. You know, we've been on meetings about potential things for, you know, the broadcast. Are we going to do it in the building where they play? Are we going to do it from a remote location? There's a lot of things that still have to be figured out. But I definitely think that it's going to happen, and I can't wait.
Talking to Chris Mason, and Mace, I was looking at some of the possibilities. If it is 24 teams, and let's hope that it's something like that, the other option might be 20, and there's a debate going on whether, you know, you should have teams 21 through 24, especially you get the benefit of huge markets, New York Rangers, Chicago Blackhawks, Montreal Canadiens, to name three, that would be in there. But I started thinking about this. A, I like the idea that they've proposed that you would play a round robin. You would play five games or so that would count. They would mean something because it could change the seeding, but they're not playoff games per se. So when you haven't played in 3 or 4 months, that would be an important time, right, to evaluate and get guys back playing games that wouldn't be the type of game that would have the high stakes of a playoff game.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And you know, it's not like it's exhibition because they do mean something. But having said that, everybody's, you know, starting with the same disadvantage, I guess, in terms of, you know, players being able to skate. You know, I saw Henrik Lundqvist and some guys are starting to get on the ice now and skate at the possibility of coming back. And again, nobody's been told anything concrete or specific yet of what exactly is going to happen. So, you know, some guys are able to get in and get private ice and get on, you know, skating, but obviously nothing in a team setting at this point. So everyone's going to start. Those five games are huge. I mean, when you play an exhibition season, you know, there's about eight games, but, you know, if you're a veteran, you don't play in all of them anyway, and you kind of, you know, you're ramping it up and you're not going full tilt. I shouldn't say that. You go full tilt, but it's just not the same things at stake, obviously, with the outcome of the hockey games, and there's a lot of different players in the lineup. But I listened to Austin Watson there on his Zoom call there the other day, and, you know, he said if he was getting ready to play games of that magnitude or even training camp, he'd be on the ice skating right now. So it'll be interesting. That's the one thing that I'm really interested in. However they decide to do the league, I guess whatever they decide, that's the way it is. I'm okay with it. It's way above my pay grade. So I just wanted to come back. But I'll be interested to see how they do, how much time they give the players before they actually start playing the games to get back into shape and to, you know, to get some practice time. And, you know, no matter how hard these guys are working out off the ice, it just doesn't replicate what it's like to skate and that wind and the type of muscles and everything that you use to skate and actually be on the ice. It's completely different. It's a completely different set of everything. So, you know, I just that's the one thing I'll be very interested to see if they give these guys enough time. And I know they will because the PA has to sign off on it as well. But right. It sounds to me like both sides really want to get back to doing this. So I've heard some different things in other sports. Some baseball players have been pretty outspoken about not coming back. And Blake Snell, you know, I think he backtracked a little bit, but wanting to get his whole salary if they come back and all this type of stuff. I haven't heard too much of that in the hockey world, though.
Yeah, because I think that there's not as much of a monetary issue for the players because they've been paid the vast majority of their salary. So that's I think going to be a little bit easier to negotiate there. So as far as the conditioning, Mace, you mentioned, I think it's an important thing, at least 3 weeks or so to get conditioning back, practice as a team before you play these five games. But then let's move ahead because if it's the way it's proposed, perhaps, there would be a six-team Central Division. Minnesota would leave and go into the Pacific, at least the model that I saw. And so your likely scenario for the Predators, because they won't get a bye into what we know is the first round of the playoffs, they would play a 2-out-of-3 play-in series to get it going. And the most likely opponent, based on the standings now, would be the Winnipeg Jets, maybe the Chicago Blackhawks. So what would you think of that? Let's say it's the Jets. Can you imagine a 2-out-of-3 winner stays on and moves on to play, say, the St. Louis Blues?
No, I can't. And, you know, like, as you know, loving the traditional aspects of the game and the way they plan, you know, it would be something you'd be like, you know, the team that loses or whatever, you won, you know, you got to get in. It would kind of, you know, be, I'm a little wishy-washy on that, but I'll tell you what, like, the impact, obviously, of those games, but just the allure and the excitement and the intensity and the do or die. I mean, a best of three, you're going to be out there. Best of seven, you lose a game, you got time to come back. But you see those MLB play-ins. Everyone watches those games. It's do or die. It's you know, you can get in the playoffs right away or you're done. And these guys are going to be fighting for their lives. But again, it's a huge series, and that's a huge advantage for the teams. Maybe, I guess, that aren't in that, where they're sitting there waiting for the opponent. But I guess you get into that mode a lot quicker if you're able to win one of those best of three series. But I tell you what, everyone, every single hockey fan in the world will be watching those games. Even if you're not a hockey fan, everyone will be watching those hockey games. I would love to watch it, even though I don't necessarily love the fact that they have to do that. They have to find a way to get these guys playing, get as many teams and get the format, whatever it is. They got to do it, so I'm on board for it, and I'll I'll definitely be tuning in to every single one of them.
Talking to Chris Mason, Predators analyst here with us, and I wanted to get your perspective on this too, because something that I've brought up and we've discussed a little bit on this is, if they, let's just say it's July and August when this thing is going, that's going to change the off season. It's going to be a shorter off season. They're going to delay next season, and I'm just curious, as a player, how you would approach. Let's say that you're going to be a free agent. Does it change your mindset at all of, okay, I'd like to get the long-term deal, I'd like to get the nice payday, but I also understand that the finances are different right now. We don't have as much time, and you got to think about moving if you're changing teams. So would you be more inclined to maybe re-signing with your current team if they'd have you back for a one-year, more of a prove-it type deal, just to delay the big contract with everything being – so compact as it is right now?
I don't think so. I don't think that. I really don't think that'll be a deterrent to players, you know, changing what their initial thoughts on that situation would have been in the first place. You know, I speak for myself, and I think a lot of guys are the same. You know, when you're a hockey player, you go and you play hockey. If you want to stay here and the team wants you here and you like it here, you try to make that work. If you don't, you know, you look, if they don't want you, you're gone. But if you want to, you know, to try something else out or get a change of scenery, you go about that. I don't think this will deter many guys. You know, when you're in sports, you have to be adaptable all the time because you move every once or 2 years, and except for the guys that, you know, sign the long-term deals, obviously. So I don't think that'll have an effect. Maybe, obviously, you know, getting pushed back and starting in, you know, I've heard December being mentioned or things like that might be a little different. But I think once they get through this, it's just going to be business as usual. And aside from the scheduling, obviously, and having to find out, you know, the logistics, how many games, if they play a full season next year and what they cut out the All-Star game or all that kind of stuff that's been thrown out there. But as a player, I just think it's business as usual. You know, you just go about everything like you would have normally. And that's just my opinion. Maybe some guys are different, but I think the majority will just be, you know, whatever happens, happens, and same as usual.
Yeah, I just wonder, maybe from the team perspective, from the GMs, if there's more of that, you know, that trying to get one-year deals and not change as much and trying to think about, you know, the money as well. I it's just something that's been on my mind.
Well, yeah, you know what? That'll be interesting to see now with, you know, these lost games and everything, how it will affect the salary cap. I don't know if that's written in stone yet or if that's still to be determined. I know at one point they said it was going up, but that was, you know, considering or assuming there was going to be a finish to the season and playoff revenue and all that stuff. Well, obviously, we all know how that's going right now, so I don't know. It will change the business because I don't know, maybe Willie knows about that, but I don't know if the salary cap is locked in now for next year.
No, it's not. That's one of the, I think, incentives to try to play, right? If there's a way to do it, is because that everything that you pull in, particularly from the TV revenues, will go towards what the salary cap can be next year. And I know I've just read a lot of different things. We've talked to Elliot Friedman weekly about it, guys. You know that. And, you know, there's a sense that you might have to make sort of a one-year agreement, you know, contingency plan, just because this year is unlike any other one. But, it's not going to be normal. Just go back to sort of Chase's original question. For free agents, you're going to have to factor that in, right? It's just going to have to be part of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can either, you know, if you want to keep it the same or move it up, then the players are going to be paying a ton of escrow out of their salaries, so they won't be getting what they signed for anyway. Or you can, you know, lower. I guess they'll figure out a way. I mean, there's a lot way smarter people than me, especially on that stuff. So they'll get it done. But there will have to be stuff. To your initial question, Chase, the GMs they'll have to figure that out. And I guess in large part will be what they decide to do with the salary cap. And right, if they make a one-year provision, they get it back on track and try to figure it out. But from a player's perspective, I don't think that'll necessarily change any of those personnel decisions in their own personal life. But that's just me.
All right, Chris. Well, hey, we appreciate the time as always, and we will talk to you again next week.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Take care, and we'll hope to see you soon.
Chris Mason, Predators analyst, his partner in the booth with Willie D on the TV side, and I've enjoyed some of the old games that you guys have been showing. Of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs from 3 years ago that we've talked about, Willie, and coming up on Friday, 12-2, Game 6 remastered here on these airwaves. So looking forward to that. We'll have more coming on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Sauer Ohio State AD Gene Smith says he's confident that a plan can be implemented where 20,000 to 30,000 fans can attend football games in Ohio Stadium. It's interesting.
Do we feel like that there's going to be a team, a school? I mean, I guess it's different if it's a professional league because you kind of have to do what the league says. But in college football, do we feel if the majority are saying no fans, there's going to be that one school that's going to do something like that?
I don't think in football we are talking about no. In college football, we're talking about no fans. We've just been talking about it. I think they've got different dynamics in play that, you know, are you saying in other sports? Yeah. But in college, no, it's different because of what we talked about. I mean, you can't – how do you – I don't know how you keep student-athletes – or, I mean, students out of game. So you already have that tough hurdle in front of you already. Like, how do you tell them no when they're on campus? But what is interesting to me – so I don't think we're talking about college football with no fans. But what's interesting is for places like Ohio State – in Michigan, in LSU, and Alabama, and I can go on and on. We all know the suspects, right? The usual suspects of incredibly Clemson, crazed, rabid fan bases where they sell out all their games. If the number is 20, 25, even maybe even 30,000 for these big stadiums, once you get past the students, because there's not that many students in these games, once you get past the student section, how are they going to decide who gets in? That's the thing to me that is incredibly tricky. Okay, so how does LSU figure that out? They just come off a national championship, you know, winning season. How do they determine? Let's say they've got 15,000 people they have to choose. How in the world are they going to get to that? Is it just simply the biggest
lottery? It's probably going to be. Well, that's one way you could do it, you know, to the highest donors for sure. But I find it interesting that I notice in a lot of circles they're doing this. Even schools, for example, are looking at their classrooms and saying, okay, if we put our students 6 feet apart, how many students could we get in each classroom? Like every school has different size classrooms, right? And every school has got a different number of average students in a class, right? There are some teachers that have come out and said, you know what, I had 39 kids in my class. There's no way we could have school in the fall and have social distancing. It's not feasible. So how do you try to overcome that? What can you do? And the same is true. I saw a tweet where somebody had done a study of arenas, right, and figured out if you had social distancing and you maintained 6 feet on each side, the average arena could only hold 2,000 or 2,500 fans, I think, if you really did it right. And so how much revenue is that? And then in football, I'm sure everybody's doing that with their stadiums as well. So that, I'm sure Gene Smith did some sort of study to come up with that number. But, like, is it going to vary from school to school or league to league? Right? Is Ohio State going to be able to say, yeah, we can get 20 or 30,000 in, but Michigan says, or we're just not there. In the state of Michigan's different, or the governor has a different rule or something. Once again, it's going to create a lot of questions with college in terms of football. Is there could be different terms for different schools, whether they're playing at all or whether they're playing or whether they're playing with fans.
Well, the governor of Georgia said that in Athens, they can just go on and sell out the game. It's okay. No, it's just that's a joke. It's a joke.
Things, I know. Surprise me.
Things, are laugh.
Little, things are a little loose down there.
You got to laugh out of me.
Would we be surprised?
Nope.
If he didn't say that?
Nope.
Excuse me.
No, I look, there's nothing with that state that surprises me right now.
No. Well,
surprised you haven't driven down there to get a haircut.
I know. I'm getting close. I'm getting to my breaking point. I think I'm going to have to cheat on her and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I've been going to her for well over a day. I mean, it's been
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you.
12-15 years probably. Somewhere in that range.
Right. And I just, you know, I have the place that I like to go, but if I was living in Rutherford County like you are and places are open, I would have done it a long time ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Even with a history of, let's say, 14 years with one person?
Yeah, and it would have been tough, but it's I know I get to a certain point with my hair, and it's outside of the dumb thing I did last year during hockey where I grew it out. But I get to a point where it's just, no, too long, I got to go get it cut.
Yeah.
I mean, I finally broke down with the beard, so.
I probably haven't had this long. I can't even think of the last time I've had it this long. But going back to this, I don't know how they're going to figure that out. Like, if it's let's say it's limited. For some schools, it's going to be easy. It's going to be much easier than other schools. But for the schools where it's a difficult task of trying to whittle it down to, let's say, 25,000. Or 30,000 people. Who gets told no and who gets told yes?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to have to make that decision. I don't even know
I
how they go about
I think
it.
To be fair, it would be a lottery, I think.
You do a lottery with some people, but as a donor or somebody that gives lot of money.
That's right, gives $100,000 a year.
They
you're going to tell them you're out,
want.
Sorry? Right.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I mean, Willie, what you're saying is truly the best way to do it because that's fair for all. But then what about the heavy donors that are breathing down your neck when you don't select them? And you say, but yeah, but this is how we did it. It was fair for everybody. And they're like, yeah, does that person donate the money that I do every year to this program?
And do they get to go to all the games? Or is there a rotation where, okay, here's how we're going to do it. So-and-so, you're in a category. This is what you give. You're going to get to go to the three games, and then this faction is going to go to the other three games if we have six home games. You know, you could do it that way.
Right, and then people bellyache. Right, so I get the Florida Atlantic, Central Michigan, and App State game, and
they get Florida,
LSU, and Auburn? Really?
Well, we also don't know what the games are, right? Who knows if they'll even be non-conference games.
I'm just saying, you know that'll happen, right? Like, oh, that's great. I get the three non-conference games, and they get the three beefiest games on the schedule. Fantastic.
But it could be a lottery, though, for which games you get.
I understand. That's lottery is fair, but people are still going to bellyache. They're still going to complain. Don't forget, people are,
you know what I would say?
People
would
are
say,
complaining
hey,
to Costco
we
that
have
they have
games.
To wear a mask.
be happy that we have games, right? I mean, there's got to be a little perspective and a little, hey, work with me a little bit here, okay? This isn't your normal season.
Yeah. Well, like I said, people with Costco memberships are complaining they have to wear a mask.
That's just, come on, people. People are just going to complain about everything. There could be a breakthrough tomorrow. It's completely cured. Everything's back to normal, and you'll have somebody complaining about it.
Yeah, like, that's kind of how it works, though.
Let me hide behind my keyboard and let you know how I feel.
I wonder, by the way, it looks like also that all signs are pointing toward these football players, these kids, getting back on campus next month, right? These student athletes? Isn't that what it looks like?
It seems that way.
I think that's the goal, if they can get all the details in place to where they feel safe about it.
I just and we're seeing, you know, some of this conversation is based on what's happening. It's getting warmer. And that was one thing that was brought up of, as we get into the warmer months, we're going to see this thing subside a little bit. The curve's going to flatten. And I that's great. That's exactly what we want. But I do wonder, as we make these plans for the fall and the winter, you know, does it flare back up? Because I just don't know. And I worry about that.
Well, there's no question that the health experts have all raised that concern. And it's probably more than, you know, a possibility. It's probably it's a probability in all likelihood, right? So what do you do about that, and how much can we advance the battle? You know, what tools do we have to fight with between now and then when we really have to face that? So all of these things are important questions. And here's another one, right? Just competitive balance, right? If, let's say, Rutgers, who's in the Big Ten, they're not quite ready to open up, right? The state's not open. They've still got a higher number of cases. But the Big Ten says, okay, you can go back into your facility on June the 1st, and Ohio State's ready to go, Michigan's ready to go, you know, a lot of these other schools are. Would you hold back just to keep Rutgers from being put at a disadvantage? You know, I'm using those schools as an example. You know, in theory, it could be a different state that's affected, right? Or is it, hey, if you're ready to open, you can open. If you're not, tough luck.
Well, that's probably what it's going to have to be, right? You can't
What's fair,
that.
Though?
I know. Well, I'm sure that there's a real shot that when things start to open up, Stanford's going, yeah, we're not ready to be back on campus again yet.
Yeah, and that's just what's tough, because what do you do? I mean, if you're a school that is ready, you can't – I don't know if it's really fair to ask them to sit around and wait, you know, a football team or something, but that's the debate that came up a few weeks ago that we were talking about. Well, what happens if, you know, 10 of the 14 SEC schools are opened and everything's great, but four aren't? What do you do?
No doubt.
We're just talking about preseason training. We're just talking about off-season training, basically, the month of June.
But still, what do you do?
You would hope that – is it different for off-season training than it is for actual season training, practices, you know, when you're talking about more like August 1st? I think you might have a different answer to that depending on who you talk to.
It's kind of like what we've talked about on the hockey side of things, where they're going to have this period of getting back and acclimated and just kind of getting in back into that routine, kind of the build-up to what's coming. That's what that window is. Remember, we're talking about much younger kids, too. We're talking about 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds. And so it's probably, you know these coaches have not been – even though we're in different circumstances, you know, coaches don't like to be out of the loop, so to speak, with their athletes. But like I said, I guess there's less opportunity to get in trouble, even though the NFL has proven this week that you can still get in trouble, as we saw with a couple of players in the National Football League. But overall, I think it's about just getting them back, getting acclimated, getting around them, and trying to get them and back into a routine. I mean, that has been my biggest fear with our kids. I mean, I get it, they're 8, but you think about their life for the last 2-plus months. I mean, there's been no structure whatsoever, none, no school, no whatever. A lot of them do after-school programs, none of that. They've probably been going to bed later. There's no structure whatsoever, and they're not in a routine. And so what in the world are they going to look like when we do get back to that routine? Because it will affect some of them. Like I said, I know in my case I'm talking about 8-year-olds, but, you know, you don't know what habits they've developed while basically sitting around doing nothing for the most part for the last 9 weeks. That's probably a little fearful for a coach.
It's a very good point. It's a very good point.
Are they going to come in shape? Are they going to be way out of shape? Are they going to be, you know.
It's probably going to be a mixed bag.
Yeah.
You're going to have some that are more motivated than others, and they know that, all right, I got to stick with my routine, and that's what they do. And then you're going to have some that have sat around on the couch and hadn't done a whole lot.
Yep. NFL Live, there was some interesting comments from Booger McFarland about the Tennessee Titans offseason. We'll play that and talk about it. On the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Not the best audio, but Marquise had to adapt and pull this off television because it just recently happened, so it's not out there yet to really capture. But we wanted to let you hear a little bit of NFL Live And maybe now I've had television on today here, I guess I see why Tim Hasselbeck didn't join us, because they've been using him a lot today on ESPN. But NFL Live, Booker McFarland was grading the Titans offseason and talking about it, and here's what he had to say.
Well, unlike Nigga Tim, I'm going to try to be positive a little bit, and I'm going to give him a C-minus also. It probably could be worse, because how did they improve? Like, this is a running football team. They want to run the ball, play action pass. I get it. You sign Ryan Tannehill back. I truly understand that. He deserved to be signed back. But when you look at how they want to win, run the football, play action pass, try to push the football down the field, you lose Jack Conklin. You lose one of your cornerbacks. And then you bring in Isaiah Thomas. You bring in Christian Fulton. I get it, some young players. But overall, I just do not think that they upgraded and added a playmaker on the outside to play at a level. Because if you look at how Baltimore plays, and this team kind of mirrors how Baltimore wants to play, which is physical, running the football, play action, they did not get better in those areas.
All right, what do you guys think of those comments? C-minus.
Doesn't change my philosophy from the 10 o'clock hour. As much as I respect Booger McFarland, I think he's excellent at what he does. I think it's a little short-sighted. I also think we don't know what's going to happen with Jadeveon Clowney. But I think you're banking on, if you're the Titans, development from younger players that look very promising that are only going to get better. A.J. Brown, Jeffrey Simmons, Rashawn Evans, on down the line. Every team, for the most part, is going to lose a couple of key guys to free agency, to age, whatever. And he pointed out some legit examples. I mean, it's an easy thing. You're going to hear it the whole offseason, I think, is can they replace Casey? Can they replace Conklin? Can they replace Logan Ryan? But I don't think that means they're not better. I think you're not factoring in young players getting better and being able to handle more in better roles.
So how do you guys how do you answer this part of it that I don't think we've touched on enough? You just named the three, but also throw Delanie Walker in there for this conversation. How do you replace what they meant in the room? Logan Ryan, Delanie Walker, Jarrell Casey, Jack Conklin. Well, in the room.
Wesley Woodyard.
There's another one. There's a good one to add to that list. How do you replace that?
And he wasn't. He was only here a year, but you know, Cam Wake's another one that was just a veteran guy that was in there. That's one of the biggest questions for me, is replacing all of that leadership. And Mariota. Mariota's another guy that, you know, has been referenced. People have brought him up. I worry about that. I think there are some leaders in that room. There are guys that have grown into that role. You know, Kevin Byard is one that really comes to mind for sure. But that's one that isn't. You can't just snap your fingers and go, all right, well, Wesley Woodyard's gone, so Rashawn Evans, now you're the leader. You're the leader of the linebackers. That's you. You don't do that. It's you either are or you aren't, and I believe that there are some guys that will emerge as that, but it's something, at least at the, you know, through training camp and at the beginning of the season, that worries me that they're missing.
Yeah, that's a concern. I think it, but it's also something that has to happen naturally for almost all teams at some point. I think about when Mike Fisher initially retired and Roman Yossi became the captain. Roman Yossi is a good captain, but he was always a pretty good leader, a guy that, you know, led by example, all that stuff, but he had to grow into that job, and there was a transition period. I think Kevin Byard will be a guy that everybody looks to, but he doesn't have the veteran guys around him to support. So everybody's role in the locker room will probably have to evolve a little bit, and there will be a transition in there. But I think they have guys who have that makeup. I think Rashawn Evans, Kevin Byard, players like that are ready to take on that challenge.
Well, I think Kevin Byard's already been doing it, so I don't really count him, because I think he's already been doing that. He's already been a big part of
that.
But how do you replace those guys that we just brought? I think Rashawn Evans has that in him? Sure, I do. But that's, you know, and maybe Jack Conklin, you don't need it. I think you already have other leaders on that offensive line, so maybe he doesn't. But Logan Ryan, you tell me. That's not going to get replaced with Fulton. You know, Jarrell Casey, what he meant on that defensive line. Delanie Walker.
Huge.
I mean,
the guys you just named right there, I mean, that's
– And Woodyard is another. That's a lot. He meant more he's one example that may have meant more to the room than on the field. And I don't want to, you know, diminish what he did. I'm not trying to take anything away from his play. He's had an incredible career, especially as an undrafted guy. But he may be the prime example of was more valuable in the room than on the field.
For sure. Absolutely.
I don't think you can just snap your fingers and say, well, you're a little bit older now. You can replace, you know, you're them now.
Yeah. And you've seen guys, you know, Kevin Byard is a great example that he's already been doing that. I think that Taylor Lewan has grown at times on some of that stuff, but then there are other times where you go, you're talking too much, just chill.
But you've got Ben Jones, you've got Saffold, you know.
Yep.
Those guys are – they've been around the block. So those three right there, pretty good. You know, obviously you can't count Nate. I think Dennis Kelly helps
sure.
the room. But, I mean, you've got a second-year guy in Nate Davis, and you've got a rookie. And so they're going to need major help along the way from veteran guys, right? Show them the ropes, show them how to be a pro, all that good stuff.
Yeah, and there are those guys, too, that, you know, for what we do, and I want to see what you guys think about what I'm about to say, of you walk in the locker room and you know, all right, Jarrell Casey's going to speak. Well, I tend to go and listen to what he has to say because I know he's one of those guys. I identify him as he has the pulse of the room. He's one of the leaders of the room. So if I'm talking to somebody else or on the other side and I see the media gathering around Jarrell Casey, I'm going to go listen. And Delanie Walker was one of those. Logan Ryan was one of those. And now it's you have to re-identify those guys. Tannehill falls in that category because he's the position that he's in, and I view him as a leader type in the locker room. But I think they have
– Oh, I think they've upgraded a quarterback in the leadership department.
Sure, at least from a vocal standpoint, absolutely. But – you know, you mentioned Wesley Woodyard, Logan Ryan, and other Jarrell Casey. They're gone. I'm very, very curious because those are four huge names, Delanie Walker being the other, that are out and that you'd listen to just as a media member trying to do their job.
Hopefully the young players have had listened to what they had to pass on and have absorbed it and are ready to pass it along to the next group. But it is a concern.
I thought it was interesting. Alan Bell said they have simulated, what did he say? They had simulated the division 10,000 times. Is that what he said? And that the Titans were the favorite to win the division? So what's the number of games it takes to win the division? Because their over-under is, what, 8.5 wins? Is that right?
That sounds right, yeah. Without having,
I think if you win 11, you win the division.
I was going to say 9-7 is not going to get it done. So,
what
does it
take? 10-6 is going to get it done.
Is it 10 or is it 11 that it takes to win the division?
10 might tie it. I think 11 wins it.
The other thing
you got to wonder is if Jacksonville is awful, right, and they win 2 or 3 games, that might inflate what it takes to win the division because everybody's going to, in theory, be able to hammer Jacksonville
a
couple
of
times.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't get any advantage. If everybody sweeps them, you get no advantage. So, it's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would probably say, is this team, of everything we've been talking about, do you think they're capable of 11-5?
I think they are. No question about it. But I do think it's a tough schedule. I think when you're playing the Ravens, you've got some games on there where you're saying, that could be pretty tough. So that, but if it's tough on them, it's tough on everybody else in the division as well. So the schedule is somewhat relative because all four teams have 14 common opponents, right? There's 1 common opponents in a division.
What would you say is their biggest attribute going into this season? How would you answer one thing that you think 22. Is their strength?
Yeah, it's got to be Henry.
They have one of the five most dominant players in the game.
Okay.
I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Who is going to be playing on a one-year contract or is going to have a new deal?
I stand behind that they're going to get a long-term deal done. I know I've read things and we've talked to people that say that they'll let him play on the tag and that, you know, it'll be another year of doing it again, but I feel like they get a deal done. That's my personal opinion. They have the room.
Doesn't matter for this year as much. I mean, I you want to avoid the cloud, right? I'd
well,
sure like
it does
it.
Matter maybe for him mentally.
Well,
don't
he
you
signed
think?
The tender, though. He signed it.
True.
And he's given no it, he's given no worried. Indications that he's bitter about that, or I mean, he's just gone about his business. So I'll give him a lot of credit for that because there have been others that wouldn't show up or you know would be vocal about it, and Derrick Henry has been nothing but professional, which shouldn't surprise anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're heading into June. I mean, they've got to, what, the middle of July? I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if they will have a deal. Well, I guess, to me, how much does Clowney...
Until July 15th.
If Clowney... That does factor in some, doesn't it? If they sign him, maybe he is just going to play on this one-year deal.
Possibly, but they still have the... I mean, they still would have the cap room because his franchise tag cap hit has already hit. So you're just adding a little bit more to it.
Breaking news right now. It looks like Disney, Universal, and SeaWorld all starting to make presentations to their recovery task force to start talking about reopening.
Mm.
Reopening their theme parks. Interesting. That will do it for our show today. You enjoy the great weather, a great day, but be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.